flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
President Biden changed all this. Remember the 37 murderers that he commuted their sentences? Remember two of them, one that he pardoned, killed two FBI agents. Another one literally beat an officer to death with a hammer. And another one literally tied up a woman who had accused him of rape, tied her up in duct tape, put a cinder block around her, and threw her over a bridge live. And so you remember that the violence that he pardoned, and I'm just saying you got to compare both of them, Aaron. If you're going to cover the story, cover both stories.
So there you have CNN and Aaron Burnett talking about these people are not very happy with the pardoning of the J6ers. The left's losing a lot of ground on things to be angry and ragey about because the J6, 1,500 or so people have now received a pardon. They kind of glazed over the people like Senator Mullen was talking about there. The Joe Biden pardon. We're all back to Trump, losing our minds on Trump and CNN. I guess that's a signal that America is back. Let's bring our guest on. Will Chamberlain joins us, senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. You can find him on X at Will Chamberlain or go to article3project.org. Will, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I want to ask you about the pardons for that Donald Trump has issued on these January 6th hostages, as they refer to you. Do you think that he handled this in an appropriate way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's reasonable to want to take a look at some of the most serious convictions before you just give a full pardon. Commutation for time served makes sense because, I mean, they've already served 3 to 4 years. I think the ultimate result should be the full pardon for everybody. And the reason I say that is not because I think that we should downplay the significance of, say, you know, hitting a cop or something like that. But rather, I think that every single one of these trials was just fundamentally flawed and failed the due process test because these people were not afforded a jury of their peers. I'm sorry, a DC jury is not a jury of any Republican political activist's peers. It's not. Yeah. Very simply put.
Yeah. Trump got 4 or 5% of the vote out of DC or something, and I'd like to know who those people are. You could probably count.
You know, I mean, things as simple as, you know, basically there was not a single person who was fully acquitted of anything. On any of these trials. And meanwhile, they couldn't, I remember, you know, in the waning days of the Trump administration, they couldn't get an indictment of Andrew McCabe, despite an IG report saying that he perjured himself repeatedly. And they couldn't get Democrats to indict him for it. It's like, right. I mean, we kind of see what's going on here where, you know, Democrats look out for their own in that city. And as a result, it is not a jury of any Republicans' peers. And you know, the judges in the district court of the District of Columbia totally dismissed that concern, just basically said, no, they're able to be fair jurors. I mean, and that was just on its face sort of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that failure to provide a fair jury trial to any of the defendants means that I think the corrective to that is the one we have available to us. A Republican administration comes in and looks at it and says, you know, and we'll look at more cases than this, obviously. I think, you know, FACE Act charges and whatever, but you know, if this was a Republican political activist facing a D.C. jury that made a change of venue motion and that motion was denied, we're just going to pardon them because we are going to correct your failure to give them a fair jury trial.
Yeah. And Donald Trump, as the president of the United States, has the authority to do that. Certainly. It was good to see him use it and to do it so quickly as part of all of the actions that he's taken. He's been in office for 48 hours and it was clearly a priority for him to do it and to get it done with. You know, when I'm looking at the effort that was made by the Liz Cheneys and the Adam Kinzingers and the select committee that was trying to make this something bigger than they were successful to do, it feels like putting these people in prison and treating them the way that they did was all a means to an end to try to keep Donald Trump from being the president ever again. Is there any other reason why they would have gone to the lengths and, you know, not having an actual bipartisan committee, but hand selecting it by Nancy Pelosi? Is there any other reason why these individuals who had to sit in prison for this long without getting a fair trial, that they would have gone to these lengths to do it other than to keep him from being president once again?
I mean, I don't know if I agree with that in the sense that I think that the prosecution of these individuals was seen as an end in and of itself. I think that the way that the left viewed it is that these people were, you know, awful racist insurrectionists, and that whether or not, you know, because I think they were going after these prosecutions well before it was obvious that Trump was going to run again. I don't think it was obvious right after January 6th and throughout 2021 that he was going to run for office again. I think that, you know, that really only kicked off in the latter part of 2022. So those prosecutions were happening anyway. I think that, you know, the Democrats felt like, you know, they just effectively saw the January 6th protesters as kind of subhuman. They didn't feel any need to have any sort of consistency with the way that they prosecuted those protesters versus how they were treating Black Lives Matter protesters or how they were treating the Antifa protesters. They just didn't care about that. They're like, we're going to absolutely throw the book at these right-wing protesters because we can and because they're our adversaries.
Yeah.
And I think it's as simple as that.
I remember Anderson Cooper reporting on this, and I remember the line where he's like, these people go protest during the day and go to their Olive Gardens and Holiday Inns or whatever it is. And just like the way that it was reported on, that subhuman viewpoint, that the people who are oppressive towards these individuals across the board, there really is a division of hierarchy and classism that it takes place. And they were successful for a while of pushing the right wing down, but I think ultimately it backfired them in a big way.
Yeah, I think real people got really tired of that attitude from the Democrats. And I think that's a big part of why Donald Trump won. And I think the failure of Democrats to recognize that if they wanted broad societal buy-in on these convictions, they were going to need to hold these jury trials somewhere other than D.C. And I think that was a big mistake made by the Biden Department of Justice. You know, if they truly believed in the virtue of what they were prosecuting, they should have said, fine, we'll go to Western District of Virginia, or we'll go maybe even the Eastern District of Virginia. It's still roughly liberal area, but it's not D.C. You know, we're talking 70-30 Democrat or 65-35 Democrat as opposed to 95-5. That's a big difference, especially when it comes to, you know, a jury that will ultimately have some people who don't subscribe to the party line.
We're speaking with Will Chamberlain, senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. The mirror image here now of the President Trump pardons. Now we have to look at just in the very, very last actions of Joe Biden's presidency, without any word or warning to the incoming presidency, he pardons people who are involved in that committee to prosecute those J6ers, ultimately to try to get to a lot of the politicos that were involved in it as well. And he pardons his family. What do you make of the people, the Faucis, the Kinzingers, but also the family members? What do you read in your legal mind into these pardons from Joe Biden?
I mean, I think it's a tacit admission that there's criminal liability there, or at least a serious risk of criminal liability. And he's not wrong. Tony Fauci has real questions to answer about his role in funding gain of function research in China. You know, I mean, the big essentially underdeveloped story is exactly what on earth were we doing funding research that likely caused a global pandemic? You know, I mean, how much blood is on Tony Fauci's hands, right? If something like a million people died around the world from the coronavirus, that makes him culpable for as much death as anybody in the last, you know, since World War II, I would say, roughly. And then lying about it in Congress, right? Like Rand Paul asked him straight questions. Did you fund gain of function research? And he just denied it. And that was false. That's him. Milley is another guy who got a pardon. And Milley's got a problem because in the last few weeks of Trump's presidency, he was talking to the Chinese government about how he would give them forewarning about what anything President Trump would do militarily, which is not his job, and in fact is borderline treasonous. I mean, his job is to carry out the orders of the commander-in-chief, not to forewarn other people about what the commander-in-chief might do. He's got a problem with President Trump. He ought to resign and be like, impeach this guy. But, like, I can't serve him. I can't, you know, in good, that would have been at least legally defensible. I think Milley obviously had criminal exposure from his unilateral decision to thwart the chain of command and rebel against the president of the United States when he was the, you know, commander of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, rather. And then Biden's family's got problems because of they were directly involved in all the money laundering and all the influence peddling that Joe Biden was doing with China and with other foreign governments during his vice presidency and afterwards. And just kind of obvious that everybody's going to investigate that. Now, I'm not as upset about these pardons in a sense, like, okay, you know, this is the new world. We're going to pardon, you know, administrations are going to pardon themselves on the way out the door. Fine. And I think we should just look at the silver lining of this is an opportunity to get to the truth, because none of these people can claim a Fifth Amendment privilege anymore. They're all insulated from criminal liability, which means when Congress says, tell us what you did and tell us how it happened, they don't get to sit there and be like, whoa, 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 you're asking me about my own conduct.
What if they perjure themselves at that point?
Yeah, exactly. And if they perjure themselves at that point, they'd be liable. That's a new crime that they're not pardoned for.
Let's go. You think the Trump administration is going to follow through on that? Make him testify?
I think Congress will. I mean, Chip Roy already said he's ready to go ahead and bring in Fauci and make him testify out about all this. I think it would be the right thing to do. I think it's hard to say what, you know, what's the objection to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say, oh, well, it's a wish hunt. It's like, well, I mean, you pardoned the guys. So maybe there's some witchcraft going on, if, right? Or you suspect that there's some witchcraft going on. So maybe it's not a witch hunt after all.
We're speaking with Will Chamberlain, senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. I had a little bit of this discussion yesterday on my show, but are you familiar with the Mike Johnson conversation, Speaker Mike Johnson, with Barry Weiss, where he's talking about going into the Oval Office and he's having this conversation with her and with Barry Weiss about how he spoke with Joe Biden in January of 2024 about why in the world would you stop our LNG exports? Why would you sign this order that would stop this from happening? And Joe Biden aggressively and affirmatively said, I did not do that. And Speaker Johnson replies and says, let's print out the paper and look and see what you did here. And Speaker Johnson said that he believed that Joe Biden had no idea that he had signed something to do what it actually did, that the president thought, oh, we just authorized some testing or some research on this. Speaker Johnson said that he didn't know what he was doing. And that was a year ago. I'm curious if there's any legal questions around the cognitive abilities of the president signing pardons, signing executive orders, whatever it might be. If you can prove that he didn't know that he did it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there would be. It's hard. It's kind of an unprecedented situation. Like, I don't think anything like this happened in terms of like later legal consequences or later investigation to undermine the activities during the latter part of Woodrow Wilson's second term after his stroke, when his wife effectively was running the country and executing all his job because, I mean, he was bedridden and non corpus mentis at that point. That's the closest thing we have to what Joe Biden was doing in the last year or two of his term. It's not obvious that what of the orders or actions that coming out of his White House were knowingly authorized by the president himself. Like, we don't know. And I don't know. It'll be tricky to find out what we do know, because obviously a lot of that stuff is really clearly covered by executive privilege, you know, conversations between the president and the staff. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard. It's going to be hard to extract testimony on that basis. So I don't know what we're going to find out. I think the really interesting question is whether anybody who, you know, violated one of these orders, you know, will challenge the order itself on the basis that it wasn't lawfully granted because Joe Biden was unaware of its contents.
Yeah.
He was exploited as not while he was non corpus mentis.
Yeah. You said unprecedented. That's for sure. Some of the questions that we see people asking out loud, I saw on Fox News today when Peter Ducey was reading the letter that he helped Donald Trump find onto the Resolute desk from Joe Biden himself. You know, they asked the question earlier today on Fox. They're like, do you think that Joe Biden even, you know, he might have physically put the pen to paper, but was it dictated to him? Does he just do what he's told? Thank God we're not in that position anymore. But I think that there's a lot of digging that needs to be done. Hopefully we have good journalism in our country that will be able to do that. But the legal ramifications seem to be huge.
I agree. I can't wait to read the books that are going to come out in like 6 months or so.
Someone's
like,
going to make a lot of money. Someone wants to be the first.
You know they're coming. Because, yeah. I mean, boy, is that a really fascinating thing. And there's a lot we don't, you know, I've seen a few. There was like a New York Times investigation, a Wall Street Journal investigation that sort of scratched the surface about exactly what was going on internally. But when we finally get like one of those senior advisors to actually like do the tell all, that'll be really fascinating.
I wonder if it'll be Jill. I'm just waiting for Jill to write the book. You never know.
Maybe it'll be Kamala, right? Like Kamala and Jill despise each other. We know that. Jill feels like Kamala pushed her husband out for no good reason. And also Jill never forgave Kamala for that primary comment where she called Joe a racist.
Yep. If the walls could talk. If they can, we will read the books. That's for sure.
Yes.
Will,
yes,
we certainly will. Thank you. We always appreciate your expertise here. We look forward to having you back soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye. Will Chamberlain, a senior counsel at the Article 3 Project, on X at Will Chamberlain. Go follow him. He's a good follow on X. Article 3, the number 3, project.org. Good to talk to.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Will, can you imagine if they could prove that Joe Biden didn't know? Like, I mean, Speaker Johnson, we talked about this yesterday, Ryan, while you were out. Have you seen that interview between Mike Johnson and Barry Weiss? It's jaw-dropping.
It is amazing. And it's funny because he's saying the things that everybody already kind of thought were true. You thought, well, does he really know the full substance of everything he's signing?
Well, and everybody thinks that it's obvious, but you just truly, if you're an American patriot, hope that you're wrong.
Yeah, but then he has real firsthand knowledge that he just shared with America
a year ago.
Right? Wait, that meeting took place a year ago?
The meeting he talked about was January 24.
Okay, because the interview just came out, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like within the last month.
Yeah. But he's saying in that interview that he stood there and told the president of the United States, hey, I got a little problem with one of the executive orders that you signed about energy. And the guy had no clue.
He also reiterated to Speaker Johnson what he thought that it did, that we were going to research.
Yeah,
so
which
it
is important.
What, to me, that's the detail that makes me very, very concerned, because he's saying, this is what I did. Not, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. He's saying, you're talking about LNG exports, liquid natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about that. Exports that apparently are out of Louisiana, of all places, which Mike Johnson would know personally because that's his state. You stopped these exports. Why did you stop these exports? I did not stop those exports. What are you talking about? That's not what happened. I said that we were going to fund the beginning of some research on blah, blah, blah. No, sir, that's not what you did. Yes, it is. Let's print it out and read it.
Yes.
And he didn't know, which makes me feel like he was told something.
Right.
That he retained. He signed it. That's not what it was. That is treason. If somebody is involved in misleading the president of the United States, regardless of his mental capacity, that to me is like, it's a big thing. I'm not marginalizing the impact of that type of a move. But if they were doing that for that, that's not the only time. If that's what happened,
right,
that's not the only time that they use that maneuver on him.
Right, right. Yeah, one of two things is happening here. Either he did know what it was and completely has forgotten, or just remembered little details of it. That's a huge problem.
All problematic.
Or his own people were deceiving him on the orders he was signing. That's treason. And that is astounding. And that's what it sounds like. Because like you said, he did sound like he had a pretty decent knowledge of what he thought he was signing.
It's not like he just forgot the whole thing.
Right. If he was like, what's that? I don't remember. My zombie hand was in action. That's not what it was. It was, I thought this was a way for us to test this better, and went into a little detail with Mike Johnson. And that's not what the executive order was.
Yeah. It's a wild thing to take in. And I want answers. I don't care if the people involved are pardoned. I think there's a lot of people involved in things that haven't had their name on a pardon list. And I want to know the details of everything.
You know, just real quick, too. The other thing Mike Johnson said in that Barry Weiss interview is that he tried for weeks and weeks to get a simple meeting with the president. He's the Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let him, the president, near anybody.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Wiggins America, food news?
It is food trends, possible food trends going
possible,
into the news.
Are you trying, is this, are these like ideas you have?
No. This is the industry. You know how I talk about the industry? This is the industry of food that's saying, this is what we have planned for you this year.
Okay, Joe Biden. We'll be right back.